This year's One Book, One Community selection is called A Mountain of Crumbs by the Russian-born author Elena Gorokova, who happens to be my guest in the studio this morning on Humoresque. Elena, good morning and welcome to Marquette, Michigan.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
You went to, came to the U.S. Many years ago after a childhood in St. Petersburg, which at the time that you were born was still known as Leningrad. And I imagine it was a bit of a tumultuous transition at one point or another, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was obviously culture shock for many reasons, but it was also traveling almost as if I traveled to a different universe. I came from literally behind the Iron Curtain. We didn't know anything about the West. We were told that the West was rotting and decaying, and we were in the Soviet Union building the bright future of the mankind. So when there was no information available, all the, let's say, magazines and contemporary books were confiscated at the border, and there was no way of finding out what life outside the Soviet Union really was. So when I came here, I was literally I was stunned. I was in shock for months, if not years.
Did you feel a sense of betrayal by your government about all that you were growing up to believe?
Well, we knew. My generation, I was born after the death of Stalin. My generation was quite cynical, to be honest. We did not believe what was told, what was printed in Pravda and other newspapers, what was broadcast on the radio and television. We knew that the government was lying. And in fact, there was this almost schizophrenic existence. There is a word for it in Russian. The word is vranyo, and it means pretending. We were playing this national game of pretending where the officials lied to us. We knew they were lying. They knew we knew they were lying, but they kept lying anyway, and we pretended to believe them. And it was almost, it felt like slicing your soul in half. One half was for your family, close friends, those you trusted, and the other half was for the outside world, for the officials, for all those, bureaucrats.
Right.
And that's how we existed. The generation my mother belonged to was very different. She was born 3 years before the Bolshevik Revolution. She lived through the famine. She lived through Stalin's terror, through the Great Patriotic War. This is what World War II was called in Russia, still is called that. And she really believed in this bright future. She worked for it. She was a doctor at the front line during the war. She was a surgeon. The war was the great glue that sort of held the country together,
right,
as you can imagine. And she wanted to work for this ideal that she was taught to believe in. So she really thought that she didn't feel that kind of betrayal. She felt the betrayal when she came here to this country, when she finally moved here, when my daughter was born in 1988, and she realized that everything that she had been told was a lie. And that, so she was the one who really felt this sort of betrayal. I think my generation, we were sort of already, we knew.
Did that? Hopefully, that betrayal became more of a relief than it was betrayal.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes, it was. And she never wanted to go back. She did not want to go back.
I see.
Although she did not speak English very well, she tried to learn it and she learned a little bit, but she certainly couldn't exist in English. She couldn't read any English newspapers or watch any television in English. So she was pretty cut off in terms of, communication.
Right.
And yet she never wanted to go back.
Except when you were able to interpret for her because you already knew English very well.
It's true.
Which ironically came from the Leningrad University.
Yes. Yes, yes. It actually came from a special English school. We had that's what they were called, English schools, where English was taught from grade one. And I was I went to one of those schools. I don't know if you want to hear the story, but in my mind, English was always very, there was something magical about English. I always loved it, the sound of it. It was unknown. It was musical. It just sounded like music to my ears. All those soft L's and those rolled R's and the intonation that always went up. It always soared at the end of sentences. There was something poetic about it. That's the only thing I can describe it. There was poetry. And maybe that's what you had to look for because life was bleak otherwise, mm-hmm. so bleak. There was a need to look for this sort of strangled poetry, and for me it was English.
Did that fuel your desire to leave Russia and come to an English speaking country?
I think eventually mm-hmm. it did, yes. but I was 10 years old when I first started learning English, and I had to go through tutoring because I wanted to go to that special school, and there was an entrance exam. So I went to a tutor, and then I passed the exam, and then I went to the special school, and after that I did go to Leningrad University, and I graduated from the English department. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, it was British English that they taught us.
Yes, okay.
But it was the British English that Russian professors thought was British English, and it was taught from Soviet textbooks. There was nothing authentic or original. There was nothing the materials were all Soviet made.
Somewhat of a hybrid.
Right,
English, if you will.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so when I came to the United States, I thought I knew English, but it was not the English that I recognized. The pronunciation was completely different. The vocabulary, a lot of the words I just didn't know. So it took me a while to understand and to get used to American English.
Well, at least you had a basis from which you could work.
Exactly.
With.
Yes, yes, I had. You know, I knew the grammar. And
right. Right. There wasn't that much difference there.
No. The grammar was pretty much the same.
Well, we say the words right here. Steve.
Of course.
That's why.
Of course.
And I understand you married an American student while you were taking courses at Leningrad University. And
I was actually teaching Russian. I graduated by then. I just graduated mm-hmm. from the English department of Leningrad University, and I was teaching Russian in the summer program at the university. The program was for American students, and that's where I met my husband, my first husband. Mm-hmm. He was an American student in that program, not in my class, though. He was in a different class. But we met, and then he had to come back in order. There was a law in the Soviet Union that allowed Soviet citizens to marry foreigners and leave the country. And that was the only way that I could have left the country.
I see. Okay.
So he had to come back twice, and then we got married in Leningrad. And it took me about 6 months to collect the papers for the exit visa, and finally, it came through, and there was a scandal at the university, at the English department, of course, you know, because I was marrying a capitalist, the worst foreigner of all. And but they finally gave me the exit visa, and I was able to leave.
I see. Apparently, we have a time where we're off the air. There must have been a power outage out at our transmitter. So those of you listening to us on our website, WNMUFM.org, get to enjoy the rest of this interview. And there will be, of course, a podcast of the interview on our website, WNMUFM.org, later today. We're speaking with Elena Gorokova, who is the author of A Mountain of Crumbs. And that's the title of our One Book, One Community selection this time around here in the Marquette area. Elena, would you please regale us with some material from this book, one called A Mountain of Crumbs?
Sure. Would mm-hmm. you like me to read an
yes,
excerpt?
Yes, I would like to hear this, and I'm sure our audience will enjoy it as well.
Yes, this is an excerpt sort of that illustrates this game of pretending, and it takes place in the third grade when children were nine. We all joined the young pioneers, and we were given red scarves that we were supposed to wear around our necks until we were 14. And at 14, we would rotate out of Young Pioneers and join the Young Communist League.
I see.
So this excerpt has to do with the Young Pioneers. It was always the anniversary of the Great October Socialist Revolution that was celebrated in November because there was a change in the calendar. And that's when the school would put those red scarves around the students' necks, and it was supposed to be a great holiday for all. So I'm going to read a short excerpt that has to do with that.
Yelena Gorkova.
Tomorrow, November 7th, says our third grade teacher, all across the Soviet Union, from our glorious capital to the permafrost of the Siberian taiga, we will celebrate the anniversary of the Great October Socialist Revolution. Why is it the October Revolution if we celebrate it in November? Asks Dimka the hooligan from the last row. Our teacher, Vera Pavlovna, stops in the middle of the story and looks at him with disbelief. The Julian Gregorian calendar change is first grade information, but even back then, Dimka obviously wasn't listening. Shame on you, she says, pointing at him Lenin style. Shame on you and your ignorance. She pauses to let Dimka's shame and hopelessness sink to the appropriate depth in each of us. After a minute of silence, as the train of her narration is irrevocably off track, she turns to more recent happenings. In 2 days, when we return to school after the holiday, we are going to have a celebration of our own. A great honor will be bestowed upon you. You will all become young pioneers. With a shake of her head, Vera Pavlovna lets us know that despite school policy, Dimka, the hooligan, is obviously undeserving of this honor. The Code of Young Pioneers, which is posted on our classroom wall, requires good behavior and good grades of all its prospective participants, so technically Dimka is not eligible. But in reality, every person in every class gets a red kerchief, and Vera Pavlovna can do nothing to stop Dimka from joining in. We all know, of course, that she would never try. She understands the necessity of diverging in practice from what's been written on paper, of rules being something you recite and aspire to, not something you follow. It is clear to everyone that it wouldn't look proper if some people during the ceremony remained unkerchiefed, raising all kinds of questions about their intent and allegiance. Look at our pioneer hero of the past, says our teacher, and points to the portrait of Pavlik Morozov hanging on the wall next to Tolstoy. His story is in our textbooks, but Vera Pavlovna recites it again. A son of wealthy peasants, Pavlik found out that his father was hiding bags of wheat in his cellar, while people were starving. At night, this brave boy ran across the fields to the local Soviet and told them about the grain. The next morning, the soldiers came to his house and confiscated the wheat. The local commissariat gave Pavlik Morozov a medal. Vera Pavlovna nods her head to punctuate the last word. I glance at Pavlik's solemn head looking down on us in a red pioneer kerchief and a halo of righteous superiority. What happened to the father? Asks Dimka from the last row. Vera Pavlovna pauses and looks at him with a hopeless smile. Even if you don't know what happened to Pavlik's father, everyone knows what should have happened to him for hiding wheat from starving people. For this serious crime and for breaking Stalin's decree to give up all the harvest to the people, Citizen Morozov the Elder was arrested and served 10 years in the camps, announces Vera Pavlovna. I'm not sure that ratting on your father and having him shipped to Siberia is a heroic thing to do, even if it saved someone from starvation. but I don't say anything, and no one else does either, to contradict our teacher in praising Pavlik Morozov's vigilance and valor. We all know that some things are so obvious, you just don't debate them. You don't debate what's written in history textbooks. You pretend you think that Pavlik Morozov was a true hero deserving a medal. Just as in nursery school, we pretended to chew the bread with rancid butter when the teacher looked in our direction. But Dimka, because of his ignorance or stupidity, does not know the unwritten rules. Unlike the rest of us, he doesn't weigh what to say before he says it. He doesn't rehearse in his mind to make sure that what rolls out of his mouth will fit the code of young pioneers. So once in a while, he can ask an interesting question.
A great example of that cynicism you mentioned from your generation.
Yes, yes.
Again, this is Elena Gorokova, who is the author of this book that you just heard a segment of called A Mountain of Crumbs, which is, in a sense, your autobiography and a memoir of your time in Russia and your transition to life in the United States. Now, I understand that this would have been written much differently and had a different tone to it altogether had you not had an encounter with another author here in the U.S., Frank McCourt. What did his influence do to the type of writing that you were doing, the way you wrote this memoir?
I was fortunate to take a memoir workshop with Frank McCourt in the summer of 2004. Before I took that workshop, I had written a number of chapters. I had written the whole book, I thought, but it was sort of this monochromatic. That's how one editor described it. And when I took the class with Frank McCourt, I learned a lot of things from him. He was as brilliant a teacher as he was a storyteller. He was funny. He just stood in front of the class and told stories, and somehow we all learned a great deal. One of the things that I learned from him was irony. It was his voice, his tragic story that was told from the eyes, was seen through the eyes of a child. And also I learned, he taught us about something he called hot spots. And those were the most significant moments in our lives. We all have them when, something important happens and your life afterwards is not the same. And in Angela's Ashes, every scene is a hot spot.
Really, yes.
And that's what I tried to do as well. I tried to, he taught us to dig deep inside your memory, go back and really go into the past. And as he said, you should, when you write a memoir, you should resurrect the ghosts and bring up the demons. Mm-hmm. And that's what he taught us to do. That's what he did brilliantly himself. Mm-hmm. And after I took that workshop with him, somehow the voice of the memoir changed. And a number of chapters were, I sent them out and they were published in literary magazines after that. And then shortly after that, I found an agent who had the book published.
And I can only imagine, because your mother was able to be with you for the last 24 years of her life at your home in New Jersey, that she had an influence in how this was written as well.
You're absolutely right, and I didn't know it at the time. My relationship with my mother was really very complicated. She was controlling, she was mm-hmm. overbearing, she was sort of like the motherland. She was like my motherland.
She personified
the country, mm-hmm. and in many ways, well, she was a survivor. That's why she survived, I think. Mm-hmm. But I think a big reason why I wanted to leave Russia and why I left Russia was to escape from my mother. And I did, and I thought I was doing very well. I lived like an adult in the United States. And then my daughter was born, and she came here. Ironically, she followed me here, and I was living with my mother again. And she tried in the beginning, she tried to be a real Russian mother who kept telling me, you know, you should wear a scarf, you shouldn't drink drinks with ice mm-hmm. because you will get sore throat. And that's, you know, that's how Russians are. You shouldn't use air conditioners, it will give you a cold. So she was trying to be as controlling as she was in Russia. And it took a while to adjust ourselves. We both had to adjust. But finally, she was very wise. She really was very wise, much wiser than I thought she was.
And we never think that our mothers are that way until later.
Of course. And then she was very generous toward the end of her life. She was very generous too. She sat down and she wrote down her life for me. She wrote two notebooks of her story, and I used it in the book. And
what
the first
gift.
Two chapters, it really was. The
yes.
first two chapters of the book tell her story. And honestly, there is a book there. I think it's of the next book that I'm working on now is A Story of an Immigrant. It's after I came to the United States. It's a story of a stranger in a strange land. And a lot of it is my mother in this country, our adjustment, and sort of this multi-generational household of three willful women, my mother and my daughter as well, who was born in this country, but who is very stubborn, I must say.
The apple didn't fall far from the tree, in other words,
no,
right?
Apparently.
Oh, okay.
But I think my mother's story deserves a separate book.
What a tribute. That would be a wonderful tribute. Yes. And again, we're speaking with Elena Gorokova, who is the author of the One Book, One Community title this year called A Mountain of Crumbs, which we heard an excerpt from. Would you tease us a bit about with this other book you just described?
Oh, it's yes. When that was your first question, what did it feel like to arrive here?
Mm-hmm.
It was the aquarium feeling. I can't describe it in any other way. Aquarium feeling of being underwater and not understanding anything at all. And this book deals the first part of it is the first 4 months of my life here when a lot of funny things happened, and now I can look back at them and say that they're funny because they had to do with not understanding the culture,
right,
or not understanding the language in many times, the English that I didn't know, American English. Now that I look back, they're funny. Back then, of course, they were not funny. They felt, to me, they felt very tragic at the time. And then it is, after I got adjusted, more or less, and then I got adjusted, of course, you know, now I feel more comfortable in this country than I do when I go back
to
Russia.
No longer a fish out of water, metaphor. Yes.
No longer that.
Mm-hmm.
It is with the arrival of my mother, with the birth of my daughter, and with this struggle between the two identities, Russian and American. And it is with being an immigrant, being leaving your country, leaving your mother and your motherland. And it is with this sliced soul sliced in half, which was sliced in half for a different reason under communism. But I'm almost finished with this book, and I sort of came to certain truths and certain discoveries as I was writing it, and I realized that this wound of being an immigrant never heals. It is everyone who left their countries, everyone who's an immigrant, I think is damaged in some way, and it is the struggle of identities. Am I Russian? Am I American? Am I hyphenated? I'm probably the latter, the last one, hyphenated. But still, the both identities, there is this tug of war.
Yes, yes. Now, people can learn a lot more about you and hear more of your writing at a special event tonight. It's in the Great Lakes Rooms at the University Center here on Northern Michigan University's campus, and it's a free event for the public to enjoy beginning at 7 p.m. And you're also going to be on campus here at Northern Michigan University at 2 p.m. Answering questions from the audience. Most of them, of course, will be students, but the public's welcome to be a part of that as well. It's in room 2904 of the West Science Building here on NMU's campus. And it has been a great pleasure having you here. I look forward to reading through this book called A Mountain of Crumbs.
Thank you very much.
Elena Gorokova is our author that is the responsible for this great memoir called A Mountain of Crumbs, which will be thoroughly examined for the next several weeks as the One Book, One Community title here in the Marquette area.